And we will endeavor to understand what has passed and imagine what is to come.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Now, here is your host, Millennial Woes.
Hello, and welcome back to Millennial 2025. This is the final stream for this evening. Unfortunately, Chad Crowley had to cancel for unforeseeable reasons. But I am now here with... Oh, let's see if she's...
Now I just need to close the door so I can get background noise. Sorry about that.
Right, great. I'm now here with Leonarda Joni, and she's a comedian from America. I think most people will have heard of her or will have seen her. She's certainly active on Twitter. But Leonarda, why don't you introduce yourself briefly, and then we'll get into your life story later. But just briefly introduce yourself.
Sure. I'm Leonarda Joni. If you look me up everywhere, it's Leonarda is funny. But Twitter, you have to spell it fun and then the letter E, because in the great American Indian War of 2024, one of the casualties was my handle to some random Indian. He stole, because I kept changing my name so they wouldn't find me. So that's a nice way to understand a little bit of who I am. I've gone to war with the Indians on Twitter. I emerged victorious, so take that, stinky jeets. And I do comedy all over the country. My location is always private because I've been canceled so many times. I just don't want to deal with it anymore. I'm pretty much banned from performing in, I want to say, most major comedy clubs in America. So I just do venues that aren't really traditional comedy venues, and it's almost like an underground show, and I get the best people who come out.
All right, yeah, it's a thing that has happened in Britain as well, where there are more hate speech restrictions and all of that. But even without that, just a general attitude, there are some comedians who have been blacklisted just for their attitudes, and they've formed a sort of community. It really emerged with the transgender stuff a few years ago, quite a few years ago now, actually, 5 or 6, before COVID, and it was gender criticals. That is a thing, and it's interesting how comedians seem to be there. There seems to be a tendency for some comedians, a minority of comedians. So most of them are completely on message, but there's a minority of them who fall between the cracks, as it were, and become outsiders. So it's an interesting phenomenon, especially in this time when things are very rigid, and or they have been recently. But before we get to that, let's talk about your own development, because I think like myself, and I won't be interjecting with my own stories too much here, I hope, but I started off as an avowed liberal progressive, and so did you. So why don't we start with that?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that's so great about having come from that side, is like when the liberals try to attack me, I'm kind of like, I know everything that you're thinking because I was you. And I know for a fact that you're not having any original thoughts. You're downloading software from different sources, and that you are scared to death, not just to step out of line, but to even think about stepping out of line, because you know the repercussions, because you've often been an enforcer of the repercussions, you know? And I think part of why it really... I don't know that this pisses them off as much, but they think that we're like on the right side, like we're closed-minded and we're stupid and everything we're saying comes from ignorance. And we're like, actually, it's exactly the opposite. We're probably more open-minded, I would say, than either liberals or lifelong conservatives, because we did stretch to the other side, right? We thought the way that they told us to think: be loving, be compassionate, be empathetic, be kind. Everybody is beautiful, whatever, right? We took that on, and through repeated, and this was my experience, through repeated exposure of evidence to the contrary of the ideology that's being drilled into your head, we have learned that actually all of this stuff is false and it needs to be rejected if I'm going to have any hope of finding the truth. And I find that people on the left are not very interested in finding the truth, because there's nothing to gain from even seeking the truth, right? Like, best case scenario, you find evidence that confirms your liberal worldview and you don't have to step out of line and you don't have to be attacked. But what's likely to happen, or worst case scenario, you find contrary evidence to what you believe, right? Now you're going to either be in this cognitive dissonance where you have to live under a certain ideology and say the stuff that you know is false, or you're going to have to step out of line and then take the attacks that you have, you know, in your past life fired off at people. So there's literally nothing to gain by doing what we did, right? And I think that the majority of them are cowards and they're not very interested in the truth, because if they were, they would have also woken up the way we did.
Yeah, this is this weird thing where you realize that most people are just not that bothered about the truth. They would rather have social acceptance and social respectability. And the truth is just a far off concern, if at all.
And which is insane. This is insane, because you do not have life without the truth. Maybe not right away, right? Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but I guarantee you at a certain point, sacrificing the truth will cost the life of you or someone you love. Just look at what's happening with everybody who took those freaking shots. It's like,
absolutely,
you know.
Yeah, that was a big wake-up call for a lot of people. I think also just the reality of diversity. I think that it's becoming so prevalent now that no one can. Well, it's much more of a struggle to delude yourself about it. But I shouldn't say no one's doing it, because lots of people still are.
It. It's kind of crazy how, because I was. You know, I lived in New York City. I was around diversity my whole life, you know. And so, you know, there was the early part of my life when I was in the Bronx and I was not fully indoctrinated yet. You know, although when you're in the Bronx, it's kind of unavoidable that you're going to have friends from different racial groups because you're going to public school and that's the way it is. But I found the whitest black girl in my like first grade class, and she'd like books. It was completely contrary to the stereotype, right? But in my neighborhood was the stereotypical black kids that lived in the projects and liked to come around and steal your bikes. So we all had what would be called racism, that when we saw the black kids, we'd be like, hey, let's go inside or take our bikes inside. Which today and there was no shame. And then there comes that period of going through school, college, really post-college, being in the New York liberal scene, the acting scene, which is talk about people that are spineless and without a backbone. Actors, you understand why they literally started from prostitution, and they are still prostitutes, like in the literal sense, as we saw with the Harvey Weinstein case, but also in the figurative sense that they sell any kind of value system or right to believe in the truth for a potential job. And it's gross. You can see how you just get this energy from them, like men who have the blood of Vikings running through them. being self-effacing and apologetic, and you're like, I can see your archetype. This isn't you. Like, step into what you are, because here's the other thing. All those people you're doing it for, they know what you really are. And they think you're pathetic that you're groveling and that you've shrugged off who you really are for the crumbs they're gonna throw you. If you step out, they're gonna hate you for sure, but they're gonna respect you. This way, they hate you and they don't respect you.
Yeah. So yeah, you're not gonna make them like you. You're not gonna make them
not
respect
under any
you
circumstances.
Or care about you.
I think the only thing you have is you actually lose more, because the other way you're an enemy, but you're a formidable enemy. This way, you're an enemy, but you're a pathetic enemy. You pose no threat because you've castrated yourself, you know?
Yeah.
So this is the undercurrent of, you know, what I was developing in my 20s, you know, and being around that and not even really thinking contrary thoughts or thinking that there was even any. It's like you don't know what you don't know, right? Not even knowing that I wasn't critically analyzing what was being fed, because there's like almost like this natural kind of self-preservation instinct that stops it, because you're like, well, I got to be an actor, right? So adults, you know, you're going to go along with whatever it is. But right around, I think it was 2018, 2019, this trans stuff really started to go crazy. Like, the agenda was just everywhere. And this, I was going to this all women's meeting that was, you know, to help us kind of recover from trauma, especially like in, like, it's kind of sexual trauma, but not really. It's more like your sexual development and things that may have been traumatic. Like, some people had bad experiences with men, or they grew up in super religious families that made them feel just any kind of shame, even on a healthy sexuality. So this kind of stuff, and it was all women's, right? And one of the women who's coming regularly, all of a sudden, starts to transition to being a man. And so it's like, okay, well, if you're a man now, don't you think you should start going to the men's meeting? There was another similar meeting down the hall that was just for men. And I can't remember if she started doing it or not, but I remember being uncomfortable. And it's only when I like reflect back that I can see that what I did was I took that discomfort and I buried it, because again, there's nothing to gain. Like, if I say anything, I'm going to lose all of these people here who are my friends. I'm going to get attacked. It's scary. Until it got to a point where I just couldn't take it anymore. I couldn't swallow it. I just, you know, burst out one day and screaming at a friend of mine that we were talking. We weren't even talking about this. And I just started being like, that's a man. I don't care what you say. I don't care what you put him in. It's a man. Why do I have to say that that's a woman? And I was really angry, because I hadn't even realized that I'd been forced to betray myself and go along with an ideology that contradicted what I could clearly see was true under the threat of violence. And I was aware that there was an implicit threat of violence. I just knew. You say something against this, you're going to get attacked, even physically. And so there's go ahead. Sorry.
I can imagine that sort of environment. Just to be, so that I'm understanding this correctly, this was a biological female who started transitioning to, that process.
Yeah, but when and I started screaming about it, I was thinking about all the men that they were trying to tell us were women.
Right,
So that's when I started screaming about it, because that was the one that really, like, whatever, nobody's going to be, let's just be real, nobody's going to be threatened by a woman who wants to be a man. We're just going to be like, you're just a weak man, and it's sad, but nobody's going to be threatened by that. And it's not really the thing that pisses people off. It's still bad, don't get me wrong, It's still bad because you're destroying young girls, mostly white, right? The Pakistanis aren't transitioning their females. They might be doing
No, they wouldn't allow it.
genital circircumcision on them, but that's not,
Yeah.
you know. But
No, it's not the same.
it was the fact that I was being forced to pretend that these clear male figures were women, and it made me very angry, and I didn't want to do it. And I knew that there was a threat of violence to not going along with that. And if, and then I'm like, this is supposed to be fucking America. And all of a sudden I wake up and we're in like, we're past the point of almost a full scale communist color revolution here. How did
And
this
it's a
happen?
change. It's a fundamental change. For thousands and thousands of years, nobody was expected that this expectation wasn't placed on people. Nobody was expected to think that person is now a female. That person is now a male. And suddenly it was everywhere. And people were behaving as if it had always been like this. And it's completely rational, completely normal, and it makes
Because
sense.
any, because those of us, those few people, maybe even those people who were pretending, felt what I felt, this implicit threat of violence. And we had been kind of, you know, this is kind of, you know, all the, for all the feminists and their accusations of rape and coercion and everything, I'm like, yeah, we've all been like psychically raped. You know, this is like the guy who's just like, no, just come here. No, we're not going to do anything. Well, and then the next thing you know, you wake up and you've been raped. And this is what I, that's the experience that I had internally was like, I've been violated. I've been utterly violated.
I'm guessing also that this women's group was a sort of oasis for you of safety, and suddenly it was
Yeah.
being perverted.
Absolutely, because you know, I know I'm not like a, you know, I've become like anti-feminist or in a lot of ways, but there's still some stuff that I think is important, you know, like I do think it's important for women to have healthy sexuality, which we don't have. You know, what gets preached as healthy sexuality these days is like go out and screw a bunch of guys and have a good time. And it's like that's not good. You know, it's like to understand what that is and what it's about, and also, you know, you don't, like you don't want to be frigid with your husband because of having grown up in a super religious or conservative home that doesn't know how to handle that, right? And like on the opposite, because then you don't get any like health, right? So it's like you come from that, and then they go, you know what the solution is? Bang a bunch of dudes, and neither of those actually fix the problem.
No, of
So
course. I mean, it's
this
crazy.
group was like a place where you would discuss this stuff in a healthy manner, and it would like give you affirmations and an understanding of this stuff. Now, of course, we were in New York, so it's a little bit more liberal, so they would lean a bit more into this, you know, freedom. But it really wasn't that kind of crazy thing that we see everywhere. And even that, I think women's, the whole women's sexuality in the public sphere had gone so nuts now, even more than even that time. Because at least then, you know, we had kind of, there was this understanding, like women would come in and they would talk about how the you know, opposite spectrum of me, like I'd been raised super conservative, didn't have that, but women would come in and talk about how they were very loose and they realized that it was a way for them to get value and that they were doing this to try to earn love. And the meeting was kind of like helping bring them back to be like, you don't have to do that. Your value's internal. You can say these affirmations to yourself. I don't have to confuse sex with love. Like all really healthy, kind of good stuff, right? Bringing people back from that. And now we got to start doing this crazy shit where we're going to pretend that this girl who's been talking about how uncomfortable she felt when she got her period is a man? What?
That's the thing. It alters everything. Any, because that's one example of it, but it's the same thing everywhere, because you can't have a like a TV writer's room, right? Okay, it now has to deal with trans stuff, and trans stuff has to be woven into as much as possible of the storylines and the characters. So everything is then infected with it and distorted by it, and cannot continue as it normally would, as it healthily would.
Yeah.
This is something that I find really bizarre about it, that it becomes a sort of doctrine that overwhelms everything else.
Yeah.
And that, I think
yeah,
that's what
becomes,
it was,
that
yeah, how it
becomes
was pushed.
key. And then it, you know, what's interesting is it becomes a template for teaching these wokesters how to deal with anything they don't like, so they can kind of intuit, you know, what the oppression scale is supposed to be. And so you're a woman, you're oppressed, we're with you until you say you've been sexually harassed by a black guy. Now you're just racist white woman, right? And it's the black guy who triumphs until he says, you know, a tranny tricked him into having sex, so he beat the crap out of him. Now you're a homophobic bigot man, and straight black men are the white men of the black community, or whatever stupid thing they say, right? And it's the tranny, right? So they understand implicitly, and I understand it too because I was there, so those impressions are in me. So, you know, like there was that battle that came up recently, that black woman who was in Gold's Gym and she's taking a shower in the locker rooms, and then this man comes in, but he claims to be trans. And before anything, I was like, the guy's gonna win 100%. He beats her. And I knew internally what we're supposed to feel because they've done this, they've programmed this stuff. So I just knew that, uh-oh, we're wrong, because tranny's on top every time. Tranny's on top.
Yeah. This is an interesting aspect of the transgender stuff, but just feminism in general. I think it really keys into this part of the female psyche. You were saying that they're very aware of the victim hierarchy. In another age, the women, normal women, would have been very aware of some other hierarchy, some other social furniture. In our age, it's that. And I think that women are very attuned to this kind of thing. And so feminism, and especially the transgender stuff, really takes advantage of this desire to conform, this desire in women, especially young women, to work out the rules of the game and then just play by those rules
Play
and
by those
conform,
rules
be a
to
good
get to the
person, be a good
top.
girl.
Yeah. And you know what I think it's done? This new hierarchy, and this is always, I think, what happens with communism, has made it possible for the absolute scum of society to be at the top. So you look at it, it's the uglies, it's the fatties, it's the gross character. And they, under like any kind of natural order, which I believe is God's natural order, these people are rightfully disdained and treated like the crap that they are, because they're literally contributing nothing. You contribute nothing in terms of beauty, you contribute nothing in terms of your labor, because all of you are somehow disabled, you know? And so it's the resentment of this group that has motivated them to figure out how to invert the system so that the worst of the worst is actually on top. And what they are
Well,
doing is every time they
yeah.
do this, they are exacting their revenge on the beautiful and the talented and the capable.
Yeah. And this is something that a lot of people with resentment will latch onto this because it enables them to get revenge. Loads of people. But in terms of elevating the lowest people, I just immediately thought of George Floyd. You know, he was obviously
Yep.
just the dregs of humanity. But the left were talking about him. Well, there were literally baptisms going on. Unless I was mistaken, I believe there were literally baptisms going on at the place where he died. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, what a perfect metaphor for what they're doing, right? That's their new martyr, their new God.
And it's happened before with other similar cases like Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, I think his name was. Mm-hmm. There have been loads of them over the years where it's someone who is obviously the lowest of the low, a career criminal, junkie, violent, etc., etc. But the left go crazy and lionize and beatify this person. It's just completely absurd.
That's what you don't understand. The worse, the better. Because it's a group of losers. You can't have a winner there because then all these losers are going to feel bad about themselves. But if they take the worst of the worst, then they can hold them up, and the rest of them by relativity of being not as bad as that are like, yeah, we're like, if that's our saints, then we're gods, you know? And I figured out that this is a way for them to have morality without actually being moral, because there's this new moral code that has nothing to do with reality, that we literally has never been a part of humanity, right? Like the highest sin, I believe, on this moral code is racism. I think that's the highest sin, which is interesting because I think it even tops the transphobia. I think the racism, I really do think it's like racism. That's the top sin for them. And that was never like even a thing anybody thought of, because it was so natural that you would care about your own people more and like not really feel comfortable mingling with people that are extremely different than you. I mean, it was so natural that like the British hated the French, and genetically it's like very difficult to tell the difference between them, right? But like that's how clear that was. And now it's become the highest blasphemy. And that's an easy code for these degenerate, horrible human beings to follow. Because number one, they're already scum and gross, and usually their own people don't want them, right? Let's like take a look at the chicks who get with black dudes. They're fat, they're disgusting. Nobody wants, that's really true, right? So they're already like angry at the rejection. They're at the bottom. So they're never going to win in the actual moral virtue system. Okay. But this one, they can easily, because first of all, it's a benefit for them to pretend that you like this and this is what you want, right? Because then you're like, yeah, I'm choosing this. And then all you have to do is say things that don't really affect you. You don't really have to do anything different in your life, right? Like all those people who donated to Black Lives Matter, do they care that the money was stolen and bought? They bought these mansions and luxury flights, and then the Jewish guy who was behind the organization took the majority of money. Did any of them protest for that? Did any of them demand their money back? Did anybody press anything? No, because that would require real action. And the only reason about giving the money or putting the post up was to earn these points of morality very easily. And what it does is it allows them to feel like they're good people. Because look, I'm following this moral value system that's really easy for me to do because it doesn't cost me anything. And hijack that true moral feeling, because I do think we're, especially like Europeans, have an internal programming to want to be moral and want to be virtuous. But that real morality, real virtue costs you something, whether it's courage, right? Chastity, any one of these things, generosity, charity, those suffering. Things actually, it costs actual suffering, and you have to go through labors. And the reason is that process of doing that is actually what sculpts the moral character. And it's hard. It's labor. It's literal labor. So when you look at these people, you'll notice that it corresponds to every other aspect of their life. I don't want to do the literal labor that it takes to be virtuous, like exercising and eating right. That's what it takes to be beautiful, right? So I'm just going to say all people are beautiful and I accept myself and all this stuff. Easy virtue, right? And then you look at their lives, like they don't want to do the hard work of applying their brain or doing the physical labor that they need in order to boost their financial situation. No, they want to demand more of yours because of equality. See, all the easy routes to the fruits that we naturally want, but they don't understand because they're too stupid, that the process and the labor of getting the fruits is actually what makes the fruits worthwhile. That's why you're so dissatisfied and you keep asking for more and more because of the, it's like the hungry ghost, you know?
There's another version of this in actually in the transgender stuff where a young, let's say a 12, 13 year old wants to know who they are. They want an identity like everyone does at that age. You're especially 13, 14, 15, you're working out who you are. And I think that the transgender stuff offers an easy alternative to all of that. They can just say, well, this is what I am. This is me. This is who I am. This is the individual that I am. I'm non-binary. I'm gender fluid, etc. And it takes away all the hard work of actually, well, becoming a person through trial and error and suffering. So you can just be this thing, and it's something that commands respect from everyone else.
Yep, that's it, right? It's you are the warrior, right? You're the hero. You're the maiden. You're trans, right? You're the transgender. So you're the victim, like for the women, right? And people don't know this, but the biggest group of transgenders, the biggest demographic is white female teenagers. Girls, white female teenage girls. Sorry, that's actually the biggest group.
Well, of course, because they are, it makes sense because they're looking to conform to something.
Yeah.
And if mainstream society isn't giving them hard and fast things, then.
But that's also like, you know, when I was a teenager, it was be skinny, right? So all the girls were anorexic and bulimic. That was the way you got the virtue, right? And not me, I did it wrong. I became a compulsive overeater and just got fat because I couldn't figure out how to do eating disorders right. But that was the thing, you know? And now it's like, oh yeah, you can't like lose your tits the old fashioned way by starving yourself. You got to go chop them off, you know? But that's the highest virtue of, in a way, it's still like a female value of being a victim. I need to be rescued, you know?
And the victimhood is part of it, I think, as well, because I think, again, that sort of keys into a certain part of female mentality to be the victim, who the damsel in distress.
There
but
you
in
go,
this
yep.
case, it's a, yeah,
it's the old,
transgender.
You know, medieval value system, right? There's like, that's really like what it is about being a woman is you want to be rescued. That's where you, because when someone's willing to do the hardships of rescuing you, it means you're valuable. That's how a woman gets her value. We cannot escape what nature has done, you know, and we see a lot of women today who are lost in, they are attempting to get, they've been told that that's wrong. Reject that. Okay. The other problem with that is that a lot, those women don't have, you don't have control about whether somebody comes to rescue you. You have to wait for somebody to affirm. And you may not like who that guy is, right? Especially if you're like a mid, right? Usually it's going to be a mid dude. And you're going to go, oh my God, that's my value? I don't want that to be true. And it's like, sorry, bitch, it is, you know? Either that or you're going to be alone. And so they're like, okay, you know what? If I just reject that whole thing, then I can be the premier, but I can't do it in the feminine way because that's passive and that's still going to require that vote that I don't have control over. I'm going to do it the masculine way. Hey, look, all the men that I want are high achievers. They're, you know, aggressive and ambitious. And that's like the highest thing in my value system. So if I do that, then I get that same value. And it's like, that's girl math. Like, no. That's not going to work. Actually, it makes it worse because now you have left all of these other men who probably would have wanted you. And you're like, no, I can't. You aren't on my level. I'm making $100,000 at this fake ass job that's been invented, and you're just the plumber, real job, real value, right? But it's not corresponding monetarily. I'm getting this fake money for this fake job. Therefore, I have this fake value. But in my mind, it's real. And I'm not willing to recognize that it's fake because then I have to realize I'm a mid.
Yeah, it's a big deal. And this ties into feminism in general, that it's elevated women who shouldn't be elevated. I mean, it's elevated women who aren't that bright, who aren't that talented, certainly not as talented as the men around them, but they get elevated. And I think everyone knows in their heart that this is bullshit. This is a perverse situation.
Of course they do. Of course they do. But that's why the women, that's why they're fighting the hardest to keep it.
Yeah.
Do you think all those office mids who were doing that dance a little while ago in the office, and do you think they want that system to fall apart and have to realize that their looks match is the guy that they keep shitting on?
Yeah.
No.
But also it sets things up for disaster, because I think women naturally test men. And so those women in that environment will pour scorn on the men around them, waiting for some sort of comeback. But in the modern feminist workplace, the men cannot possibly do that. They cannot possibly respond. So it just goes on and on.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been so many layers handcuffed. Of perversity.
They've been handcuffed by the system, and not just in the office, but in marriages too. So you imagine they're doing this in the office. The men are also aware, and so are the women. You know, if he gets a little lippy, like when she's testing him, right? She's trying to see, are you going to lay down the law? Are you going to set up a boundary? Because I'm a woman, and I'm a woman. I'm going to tell you this personally. I have a lot of emotions that can be out of control. They can go out of the lines and like take over everything. And that's the way I'm made. For whatever reason, maybe that helps babies, okay, to be so emotional, right? And so I need a good, strong man who's going to go, no, put your emotions in these lines, okay? This is what you got to do. If this is going to work, this is how it's going to go, right? So this is the way it is. It's like it's a dance, right? So you got these women in those marriages who are doing the same thing, but then when the man does put them in the lines, their feminist training kicks in, which I still have, and I have to recognize, oh, that's your feminist training. That's not what's happening. You're not being abused because somebody said no to you, right? And she goes, that's abuse. I'm taking the kids, right? And walks out. And now he can't do his job of creating boundaries that actually make her feel safe, which she desperately wants. And when he does, she's going to be like, wow, I really respect you. I'm more attracted to you than I even was 5 minutes ago. He can't do any of that. So it's her own doing, right? But, you know, doesn't know. And the system's set up this way. And he can't do any of that. So he's got to take it. He's got to take the trap. I mean, I was just talking to someone that I know who lives overseas, and he was telling me all these things about his wife, that she's doing this, and, you know, she'll make dinner, and he'll be like, oh, can I get a plate? And she's like, well, am I your servant? And I'm like, are you her servant that you pay for the house that she lives in, and you pay for the car, and you literally are the one who bought the groceries? You are her servant in that way. We serve each other. That's the truth. But I go, why wouldn't you just be like, I can't do that? He goes, because if I do, she's going to take the house. She's going to take the kids. She's going to take everything. The whole state's behind her. I'm aware. So every day his wife is doing this shit that's a test, and he can't do anything because of the system. And she's winning in her mind, but she's losing respect. She's losing the love every day, more and more, more and more.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a shit test that he cannot possibly win. So it's just going to get worse and worse. I mean, I really do wonder where this is going to go, because I don't think you can reform this. I think people are going to start just the only way that people are going to survive is by breaking away from this system entirely, or if the system itself just falls apart. This whole value system just becomes untenable. Because I think as long as it remains tenable, people are going to do it, and it's going to be really difficult to tear away from it, you definitely can't change it. It's too well guarded.
As you and I both know, there's like a nice Jewish interest in this, you know, the lawyers, the judges, all of them, the whole system is set up this way. And it's really to handicap men. I mean, the Jewish culture is different. Like, the men are women there. The women do lead. So it's just like normal for them. They don't have this reaction that the Gentiles have, you know?
I've heard different things about that, but, I've also heard that
it's very oppressive
to the women. They rebel by doing mainstream feminism against the Gentiles. I don't know if that's true.
Well, I know that the Orthodox and the Hasidics have a more traditional setup, right? But still, it's still like the case that she's like sort of commanding in that way.
Yeah. I mean, but it used to be the way that in our societies as well, that the women would rule the household. The women would be in charge of like the budgeting and so forth, and she would decide what happens and how the rooms are going to be decorated and so on. And the man would just go along with that because she's better at that stuff than he is. And that was a very common thing. Again, it's a delicate balance that's been completely ruptured. It's been completely upended. Everyone sort of responds by overcompensating. And I don't know.
I think we've been psyoped and told how horrible that is. That's why everybody has this knee-jerk reaction to that. Oh my God, he asked you to make him dinner. It's like, they're like, that's disgusting. And I'm like, you know, that's such a nice thing, actually. Oh, you like my cooking. You want me to feed you. Wow. Thanks for giving me a purpose in your life, because I can see your purpose very clearly. You bought the fucking food. You know, if somebody tries to come in this house, you have to fight them. Thank you for giving me a way that I can show my appreciation and nourish and nurture you, which women would just normally have, but we've been psyoped against it. So now there's no experience of positivity in that. Everything gets reinterpreted through the dominator paradigm. That's the only paradigm that exists. And of course you're going to react that way. Then he asked you for a plate of dinner. You're trying to dominate me. Yeah. You're going to reject that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just so awful. As I said, for ordinary people, this is just a minefield. There's no way to negotiate it and win.
So there is a couple things, you know. Look, I'm with you. Like, I feel in a lot of ways that until the whole thing falls apart and we're in a place again where we got to like hunt food or grow food, and women are rudely reminded of reality. That's like, yeah, you need men, and they literally built everything around you, and they're the ones who are like, until that actually happens, I don't think you're going to have it on this mass scale. But I do think we can kind of form these little enclaves through the culture that we're creating, sort of this parallel culture here that we're creating through the shaming of that kind of behavior, the mockery of it. And of course, like on our side, we have aesthetics. Like, the left has these disgusting goblins who look like they crawled out of the freaking Black Lagoon, you know? And the right, generally, like, we've got good looking people who look good or fit. You know, we've got Emily Yukis, I'm thinking about, like, she's beautiful and she's a mom and she's fit, you know? And it's like, yeah, hey girls, where do you want to be? Do you want to be cute, you know, and get a good man who's going to protect you? Or do you want to be like the slob or like that girl in Europe, that video that went viral where she got attacked and her man ran away? Is that what you want?
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, that life is a life of constant frustration for the women. It's this endless battle against reality and against biology. So
and that, yourself,
I think, is how it,
and
how
against
it needs
yourself,
to be.
Right?
Because
like this was something I recognized when I was a liberal. Like I had this instinct. I remember I went on a date with this guy once, and then he's walking me to the subway after dinner, and somebody from the other side, very suspicious looking character, if you know what I mean, kind of started coming towards us, and I got a little bit like frightened, like this guy was going to attack, you know. And then I either grabbed his arm or I said something along the lines of, I'm glad you're here, or whatever. And he was from England, and he goes, "Now, Major, I think you do a better job of protecting us than I would." And I was like, ugh. And I remember I was instantly grossed out, right? And then I was like, why do I feel that way? Like I felt an instinct. The instinct says the man's supposed to protect you, right? But I didn't have the philosophy behind that yet, because that had been stripped from my instincts, and I had had a new thing programmed of equality. And even though equality didn't exactly say the man doesn't have to protect you, I could infer from that that that's what that meant. And I kind of just thought, well, I guess I really shouldn't feel that way. That's, you know, whatever. And just dismiss it.
I, as a woman, shouldn't want a man to protect me. And it, again,
like what right? Again,
in
it was
thousands
like,
of
what
years
right?
of history, women have never thought that.
Never, right? But I, and my instincts, my DNA was telling me what you're supposed to feel, but my feminist ideology had stolen from me my sense of entitlement to being protected. Now, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it definitely is. And it indicates what feminism always was in the first place, which is just social acid, just something to dissolve all of these understandings that people used to have that held society together and made life livable. Feminism has done so much damage, and so subtle and insidious. It's amazing. It really is an incredible weapon that's been unleashed.
It's pretty heinous. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. So to return to your life story, your development. So you were in that the women's group, and the transgender stuff happened. What was the next phase?
So I think I started after I had that awakening where I just started, you know, screaming about this or whatever. I didn't really talk to these girls about it because I kind of knew what to expect from them. But I started doing stand-up like a few months later, and I noticed that I wasn't writing any jokes about trans people because I didn't want to get attacked. And then I had this moment where I was like, well, then there's no point for you to do comedy if you're not going to talk about what you want to talk about. Like, that's the whole reason you want to do comedy. You're not going to get paid anything for a long time. You got to hang out with these shitty losers at open mics. You got to give up your free time for nothing. And I just realized, yeah, that's not going to be worth it to me. It's not going to be worth it to me to do comedy if I can't say what I want to say. And so I did. And just as I expected, I was doing these jokes to New York. I'm on a Brooklyn rooftop, and I've got this Afro-punk lesbian couple sitting front row looking at me like they want to kill me. And that is what they wanted to do. They were just in public, and they couldn't exact their revenge. And I was like, yeah, that's what it was like confirmation. Yeah, that's why you feel that way. That's why you felt an implicit threat of violence. There is. Here are these two people who are completely not affected. These are both women, not affected by any kind of trans ideology at all. Actually, you're going to be negatively affected, as we're going to find out in a few years, especially with the emergence of the TERFs. And you want to attack me because you know that if I unravel the trans ideology, you're next.
Yeah, that is an interesting thing, isn't it? That the trans thing has developed, and it's become a sort of protective layer over all of that stuff as well.
And it is built on all that stuff.
LGB.
Right? Yeah. They didn't just go to trans. You know, we can kind of go backwards about how they got there, and this is where I think race was the first layer that they really pushed. And people don't realize how long, you know, white people have been suffering violence at the hands of black people. We were just told it was the opposite way. But even when we go back and we look at articles from the 60s, 50s, 40s, even before that, the time when you thought white people were so in charge and they ran this country and they were so violent, you're like, they were tolerating this kind of violent abuse without enacting revenge? They were tolerating this? You go, wow, we've got a serious genetic problem, us white people, with how much stuff we tolerate at the hands of abusers because we don't want to be categorized as this negative moral value system. And so they did that, and they kept building things and adding layers to it. And then they got then they you know I think after the race thing, it was the feminism thing, then it was the gay stuff, right? All the gay, and this is all going concurrent with the dismantling dissolution of the Christian backbone that was the American spine. These things are happening simultaneously, and now we've got the trans thing. Now we've come full circle to being able to to stand up for men again, as long as they want to be women.
Yeah, it's very strange. It's a long story, and it would be very difficult to tell it briefly about just how much this has all been screwed up and twisted. But yeah, I agree that that is obviously the latest iteration of it. And but I don't know if it's working. I don't. Well, I guess that gets us back to your stand-up. What happened then? Once you started making these jokes, what happened?
Can you give me 1 second?
Yeah.
T 10
Yeah,
seconds?
yeah.
One. Okay.
Yeah. Hope everyone's enjoying this. If you've got any questions for Leonardo, you can post super chats. There are various ways. Apparently, there's a problem just now with the Telegram super chat bot, but I'll be looking into that for tomorrow. So in the meantime, there's Ko-fi, Entropy, Rumble Rants, and if you get bored posting super chats, then there's also the merch, the merchandise store, and of course the NFT.
All right, I'm back.
Welcome back.
All right, here we go. Let's get repositioned. So I think where I was then is I just started doing these jokes that I wanted to do, and I had these comedians, these kind of liberal, but center. Everybody in New York is liberal, but they're only like unconsciously liberal. So it's just like, I just know I'm not supposed to say anything contrary to this. And of course, we're good people, so we're not racist or homophobic or whatever. But I'm doing these jokes, and I think everybody was under this oppression of the trans that they would come up to me afterward and go, oh, thank you so much. I love your jokes, And this was the time also that people were nuts about Trump. So if anybody had voted for Trump or said they were pro-Trump, it was like a sign to the rest of the, maniacs that they could violently attack you. And I had been
Trump
becoming,
derangement syndrome.
it's 20, since 2019, like they were nuts. And I remember being like, I won't go into that, So I had kind of like broken through the trans thing, but I was like, yeah, I'm just not going to put a target on my back. And this guy had come to one of these Brooklyn shows decked out in Trump gear. But here's the thing. He was like some weird ethnicity. He was like Indian or Persian or something weird that it confused people. And it was also like a shield. Like, what are you going to do? You're going to attack this brown guy? The whole thing is that we want to attack him because they're racist, but he's brown. And we were told you can only be racist if you're white, I'm doing these jokes that are a way to kind of break this psychological hold, and people are coming, comedians are coming up to me saying, thank you, I love your jokes. And I'm getting booked everywhere because I was, and now I look back at that time, it was early days, I'm like, God, I sucked. But for a woman, it was still funny. What people expect from a female comedian is so low, rightfully so, that if you just give them anything, just like even a few steps above that, people act like you're like a godsend, And I can tell you, I was pretty shitty comedian, based on what I see now. from those times, I'm like, oh, that's so cringe. But it was way better than a lot of women were doing. And it was edgy. It was like not quite edgy yet, but it was not the typical stuff that women go up and talk about. And so it got me a lot of positive attention and moving through that field very quickly, you know. So yeah, I did that. And then, you know, COVID happened, the shutdown happened, people were nuts. That's when really, I just really saw people break, you know, like into groups. There was the people I hung out with that were like, this is nuts. We're going to keep doing comedy. We'll do it in a park. We'll do it on a rooftop. We'll do it, you know, in a basement. We'll do it wherever we can do it. And then there were the other ones, the rule followers who wanted everybody else to follow the rules because they were shitty comedians and they liked the fact that they didn't have to do the work right now, but they didn't want anybody else doing work because then it means that they're wrong. And also those people are going to get better and you're going to keep sucking. So they started attacking people who were doing this stuff, trying to post, trying to do cancel cultures of them, trying to get shows canceled at this time. And I had this moment where I was in Brooklyn. I think it was like early 2021. It was a spring day. And I had this friend who was from Eritrea or whatever. And I was meeting up with her, and before I met up with her, I walked past this Nigerian dude who said something very like lewd and gross to me. And just like, you know, I've been used to New York City. You get sexually harassed all the time in New York City, and it's always a Black or Hispanic dude, which women never talk about. They talk about the catcalling, and the closest to a white guy was an Italian. And it's like that, even that has gone out of style. Those Italians don't even exist anymore. Like Italians are now fully white in America. And I told her about this. I go, yeah, I just got like sexually harassed by this guy. It was really pissing me off because it was such a violation. And she goes, oh, what did he say? And I forgot what he said, but let's say he said, I'm going to fuck you or whatever. And I did the accent. And she's like, oh, no, you can't do that. I go, do what? She goes, you're white. You can't do a Black person's accent. I go, I just got sexually harassed. Do you understand? That is a clear and present violation of me. And what you care about is that I did a Black guy's accent? Because I was trying to remember what he said. That's what you're worried about? This is disgusting.
Yeah, it is. But of course, from her point of view, if you do this, you're lifting the lid on the fact that all of this sexual harassment is by Black guys and brown guys. So
that it's still about holding on to power at the end of the day for them. And it's like, here I am, right? This would actually move me up the victim class because here I am, an actual victim. We can't do that. I still have to maintain the power dynamic. You're still a white woman. We're still going to maintain this power dynamic. And I'm still going to side with my fellow Blacks, even though before this point, we were women and we were all in this together against men and how horrible men are. But the minute you want to point out that one of them is from my tribe, suddenly I'm back with my tribe. And I just had this awakening. I realized this is a bad situation for me to be in. I'm surrounded by hostile enemy combatants who, even if they're my quote unquote friend, see me as fair game. If I make a misstep in this department, I've got to get out of here. And I moved to Austin.
That's really interesting because I think a lot of people have had similar experiences of that where they suddenly realize that race is real and that everyone around me cares about race and they've been lying to me and I've been wholeheartedly taking part in this lie, but all the time they saw me as white, all the time they saw me as a white guy, a white woman, and all the time there was a divide there and all the time they were aware that I could threaten their group somehow, they feel that way. And so it feels like a sort of betrayal. Like
it's a realize, total betrayal. So
all this time, they were suspicious of me. They were waiting for a sign like this.
Well, it's more than that. They knew that this was disarming you. That's what they were doing from the beginning. There was no point in time in which it switched. The whole ideology from the beginning of calling you racist, of calling you colonizer, of saying you're on stolen land is about disarming you, because we can't win in a actual battle with you where you fight back. How do we know? History. The reason you are where you are is because you beat my people repeatedly. And by the way, it's not because we provoked these battles with them. That's what I found out, because I'm very much into, I love reading history, learning about history. Like I now start really following this Zoomer historian, who I think is fantastic. Because I want to know the truth, because I realize how much we're being lied to. And I go, wait, how far back did this go? And you find out it's from the beginning. It's like white people do try to, they are explorers. They want to find new lands, right? So they come into these lands, they find some inhabitants who are kind of living there, although usually they're passing through because they're nomads, and they start setting up colonies. And all of a sudden, these people who before are like, yeah, we don't have a concept of land ownership, suddenly start saying, this is our land. And so then they start trying to make deals with them. And at first they accept the deals, but then they see all the things that white people are able to build on their land using these resources that were under their feet, which they didn't have the intellectual capacity or the will to do, or the labor, the work ethic to do. And suddenly you're entitled and you're resentful, and now you want that. So you start these wars. Well, the white people don't fight right away. They're very slow to fighting. Not Albanians. Albanians are very quick to fighting because we've been doing it for generations. But, you know, Anglo-Saxons don't go to war very easily because it costs a lot, and they value life. That's the thing. They value the life of the quote-unquote savage more than the savage values his own life or his neighbor's life. That's what I found through reading history. And when pushed to a certain point, the white man fights back and he wins. So how are they going to beat us? Well, they can get us to fight each other, which has happened lots of times. The World Wars, that was a nice Jewish way to get white men to die. And now they've discovered the Rosetta Stone, if you will, of victory, which is you just get them to not fight back. We disarm them through these words, through these spells, through these incantations. You don't even have to fight.
Yeah. It's bloodless. It's an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing that has happened here. And I always think, does it rely on comfort? Does it rely on luxury? Does it rely on most white people still being safe?
Yes.
And then if that is taken away, then they'll wake up. And I think that, I still think that's probably the truth.
Well, I think that's happening. Why do you see so many people in Britain actually waking up? Why is Elon Musk tweeting about this? Whether you think he's being genuine or not, he wasn't tweeting about this a year ago. He wasn't tweeting specifically about white erasure and white genocide a year ago.
Yeah, but it's become so
blatant and in our face, the violence in our face. And that's the kind of silver lining. These savages don't have any restraint, self-restraint. They will go to the limit and beyond, right? Because we know, because they've destroyed themselves plenty of times with having no limits. And so God, in his infinite wisdom, has placed natural limits on them, where they don't have the capacity to build everything, because we see that if they did, they would just destroy and consume everything. And we, being egotistic, well, I think it was out of empathy, we're thinking, let's help them, not realizing, like, you know, I heard a wise Indian guy actually say that his grandmother used to say, some people need to be kept on the brink of starvation, because otherwise they wreak havoc and destruction, and they're not good people. And I've now come to that place where I go, I think that's why they don't have the capacity to do these things, because they also lack the ability to practice self-restraint, and they would destroy everything. And that's the kind of highlight, is that they will have no self-restraint as is being exhibited. They are attacking the one group of people who have ever been benevolent and kind to them and tried to help them, which is Europeans. And you're going to get destroyed. Like, Jews are using you as a tool, okay? And they are going to enslave you again, less like they did in the beginning. The Chinese will enslave you. The Arabs will enslave you.
Yeah, it's only Europeans who will actually treat them well. And yet they're convinced that we treat them very badly, even now, even today, in the age of political correctness and wokery and microaggressions and so forth. They're obsessed with how badly we treat them. And I think they could be in for a very rude awakening.
And they will push it to the limit of the breaking point for whites. And either we're going to get wiped out to a certain or reduced to such a low population or whatever. We really don't have any power, right? And they win. And their victory is going to be short, because nobody's going to let black people run the world. Like, the Jews aren't going to do it. The Chinese aren't going to do it. The Arabs are not going to do it. So, and they'll be begging for the days of the white man.
Oh yeah, definitely. I should just remind you that I'm in Britain, so don't say anything too edgy.
Oh, right.
I should maybe have said that at the start. But anyway, so is there any more? I think we've reached the crucial issue of race. Did that develop after that discussion, that conversation with your friend, and you realized that she cared about race and all that? Where did it go from there?
You know, I don't think I had this huge realization yet that that this was the way that everybody kind of saw things. I didn't quite have that realization yet. I still sort of held on to this liberal thing of, like, judge them as individuals. But I was aware that a mind virus had taken over, and any kind of unfamiliar non-whites for me were automatically kind of put in that category of you're probably hostile towards me, and I need to be wary of you. Right. And then it was like on a case by case basis, like if they prove themselves to not be that way, because they could criticize their fellow non-whites, or they could, you know, take jokes, it would be like, okay, you get moved to this category now. But the real awakening around race really didn't happen for like another year and a half, I want to say, where I start seeing more videos of the violence that black people are committing against white people. I don't know exactly when the Daniel Penny case happened, but that was like after, like, the awakening had already started, but all this stuff starts deepening it. I start seeing all the calls to execute white people in different ways. And I start seeing the way that we're being treated for being white. You know, I start getting like aware, like, hey, you're not getting booked on certain shows because you're white and they want a diversity thing, right? You can't say that because you're white and then people feel this type of way about it. Making these kind of jokes, even though they were just jokes, and they really were just jokes, automatically put me in the category of, oh, you're a racist. And I'm like, where did this come from? You know? And I had always had like friends from different ethnicities or whatever. And I was always like, it's like literally impossible for me to actually be what you're saying I am. Cause the definition of a racist and a bigot is like, you just don't like these people. You hate these people, any of them, all of them. And like, here I have evidence to the contrary. And now all of a sudden a new narrative drops. Oh, even if you have a friend who's black, that still doesn't mean you're racist. Even if you've helped out a black, that still doesn't mean you're racist. So I was like, you could do anything. And I saw them then started talking about like some white mothers who had mixed race children. And then they started attacking them, being like, you don't know anything about her hair. And just because you have a mixed race child, that doesn't mean that you're not racist. And I'm like, oh, you people are literally insane. Like, How is a mother of a mixed race child going to be racist? Can you please explain that to me? Like, that's beyond anything. And I realized, oh, that's not the problem. It's not really that these people are racist. It's that these people are white. And the people who are accusing them of being racist hate them simply because they're white. That's it. Period. The end.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a meme here that is relevant to what you're saying. And it's this idea that you realize no matter what you do, you're racist as a white person. There's no way to avoid that charge. So here it is.
Yeah.
It's one of these classics. Yep. I think it's great because it really sums it up.
That's exactly correct.
Yeah.
That's exactly correct. And it was like, at that point, you know, you're like, there's nothing you can, I mean, they even were saying it, right? All white people are racist. They were saying that. You have to, then they started this new thing, like, if you don't think you're racist, that's when you really know you're racist. You have internalized racism that needs to be examined, which was like so funny because it was like COVID when they were like, well, not having any symptoms is a symptom. It's the same ideology, yeah. Right? This all came out of the same school of thought.
Yeah. And unconscious bias.
Yeah, it would take a while. It took me a while to piece everything together, you know, and there's always new layers of awakening. But I would say like in the last real year, I mean, I got exposed to Jared Taylor and I started listening to him. And all these impulses that were in me that I was starting to pick up on through memes, through research, through seeing these videos, he kind of formalized and articulated and put a philosophy together that explained everything and really important, validated everything. Because I'm still a woman and I need a man to tell me that what I'm thinking is right. So that was Jared Taylor for me, where I was like, and here's an older man, he's wise, he's educated, he's not really, you know, he's dispassioned in a way because it's all just matter of fact. And it was very like, it was like empirical evidence and a clear, like making sense of all these impulses that I'm having and these understandings that I'm having and going, you're not crazy. This is the truth. This is the truth that has been beaten out of you. This is what you know in your bones. That's why you're having these impulses. That's why you're having these dreams. That's why you're awakening to this stuff. Here is what you have forgotten. And there's no going back after that because you're just like, this is the truth. You can't go back into believing a lie. You're just like, yeah, this is true.
Yeah. Yeah. I know of very few people who have discovered this stuff and then gone back. I can't really think of, I remember someone once describing himself as post alt-right, like around 2019. And, I think really what it meant was that he just had enough. He couldn't handle it. But you can't refute it. You can't refute it. It's just obviously the truth. Race is obviously real. Men are obviously men and women are obviously women and so forth and so on. And the races are obviously different. It's just very, very obvious.
They all know that.
The kids know this. Toddlers know this.
But fine. But all these people who, all these black people who want to campaign against racism and against saying race is a social construct. It's so funny how that goes out the window when it's time for you to identify a white person. Interesting.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I guess it's pretty real for you.
Yeah. Well, white people are the people who have white privilege. So that's
how
what I always
do you
think.
Recognize that then?
I don't, but it's the leftist who will rant about white privilege and then claim that he doesn't know what you even mean by white.
Right.
It's very tedious. So I always just say, well, it's the people who have white privilege, according to you, according to your own value system. I kind of like coming up with things like that. I don't know if it really works, but I find it amusing to point out that they are lying all the time.
All the time.
Even to themselves.
All the time. That's why I don't even engage with them. Like if they leave comments under my stuff or anything, I just block them. you know, unless I can make fun of them in a way that, you know, mocks them or whatever, I'll post that and I'll block them after that. I'll be like, great, you can't even come back. I've totally removed your ability because I don't believe in, yeah, I'm going to give you the dignity of all the moral code that I have. No, not doing that. You don't do that with people who don't play by the rules because you're going to lose.
Yeah. They're just wasting your time. I mean, I've had this meme that went viral this year about leftists. All they do is pretend not to understand. And it's just a way of taking up your time and taking up your energy. So you end up explaining stuff and you know that they already know it.
Yeah. So, I saw that. I thought that was great.
Response is just to treat them with contempt.
Every time somebody pretends not to know something, they'll post that thing that you said. I'm like, yeah, that's perfect. That's actually perfect because you don't have to engage with them and you have now just disarmed them because you've shown and they can go what or whatever. And it's like, no, I've already told you why I'm not engaging with you because you're pretending not to know. And look, you're doing it right now too. You're even pretending not to know what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. It really took off that tweet, and I was kind of baffled, but it's I can see that it is very useful just because it puts an end to the bullshit immediately, and all they can do is sort of flail around and claim that, oh no, I wasn't doing that, I'm not pretending anything, but it's obvious that they are. All right, well, If anyone does have super chats or questions for Leonardo, now would be the time to post them. I think this has been, it's been quite a quick journey for you, I think, over the course of about 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because it sounds like it wasn't online. You know, nowadays a lot of people get red pilled online and it happens, tends to happen quite rapidly now. For me, it was before this, all of this, you know, my process was from about 2005 to 2016. But nowadays people get red-pilled in like 2 years or even less. I don't know.
I mean, I think nowadays
because there's all this stuff.
Yeah, there's way more information available online about this stuff. It's not as hidden. The race studies, the IQ studies, all these things that, you know, were hidden from us or were discredited right before we could even investigate them. I also think that white men are going to have more of an incentive to wake up than women because you guys don't have anything to gain from that paradigm. You're the target of the paradigm, right? So it's either totally efface yourself and beg for scraps and mercy. And if you have any backbone and any bit of testosterone, you know, you're going to go, fuck that. And you know, men are a bit more of the pioneering warriors. They can go out on their own and survive. That's possible. Women now can, but not really, right? Like we still need a whole system set up for us. For us to go out and survive in.
Yeah. And for men, there's nothing really to gain from this system. Yes.
We still have something to gain a little bit, but you know, the writing's on the wall, ladies. It's not going to be that long for women, white women, to have something to gain. Like, you've turned against your men. The only people who are going to really protect you and care for you, the only people who see you as theirs, okay? Those are the only, like, yeah, that means being a possession, the way they say it, like, it makes it so demeaning. It's like, you don't fight for something that's not yours. You don't go fight for somebody else's kids. You fight for your kids. You don't go fight for somebody else's home. You fight for your home. So it's the same way. You don't fight for other people's women. You fight for your women because they're yours. It's a protective thing.
So, well, absolutely.
That. Yeah. Who do you think? You think these Pakistani men are going to fight for white women? You think any of these black men are going to fight for white women? No, they want to use you. They want to use your body. They want to use your resources. They want to take your genetic DNA and take it for their people. That's what they want. So they're not, you don't protect something that you're looting, which is literally what's happening.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And that protective instinct, I can never understand liberal white men because to me, it's just so obvious. Well, you know, I remember when I first heard about the Pakistani rape gangs in Britain. It was 2012, 2013. And then this big report was published in 2014. And I remember
we didn't even hear about any of that until this year.
Yeah. I think it didn't really travel because it was largely suppressed. I mean, the media didn't want to talk about it. But I remember feeling just deep anger, frustration, disgust, sadness that this had happened, that white men had allowed this to happen. Like, my kind had allowed this to happen to our women, our young women. And there was a sense of, failure. And what the hell are we doing? How can we be allowing this? We've failed in our role to protect them, because that is our role. And, you know, some people will say that's simpy. I don't think so. I think it's just biologically, it's a biological imperative. You have to protect your young women.
I think it's simpy if you do that at the same time that you're like, you know, taking their abuse or justifying it. But the natural instinct to protect, you know, is there, just like the natural instinct to lead, to be in charge.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so I can never understand liberal white men. What on earth are they thinking when they approve of all these things that are just going to work against them and work against the women that they should be protecting? So I just, it's like the Viking guy that you described at start. It's like, it's difficult to have contempt for him. When he has that blood in him, that's what he should be. But he's so cowed and...
it's sad.
Reduced.
It makes me sad. It makes me sad because I'm like, I can see it. Not everybody has that, you know? There's some people who are just like, you were born to, like, cower. You know, you would have just been somebody's slave in a aristocratic system, and that's right for you. But when you see somebody who has nobility in them and they have this way of being, because it still comes out in certain ways, totally cowed under this system, it's sad, because you're like, you're never going to be the fullness of what God made you to be, because you're shunning your responsibility, because you've sold your soul for maybe you're going to get this part somewhere. Fuck the part. Fuck the acting industry. Fuck the women who don't want to talk to you because you're quote unquote racist. You're going to have your own self-respect. And I think that's the most important thing. Like, men need to define themselves first and foremost in and of themselves, and need to be able to have that backbone to go, I don't give a fuck what the rest of the world thinks about me. This is who I am. I define myself first and foremost. And we have a shunning of that because the world is offering you these bullshit goods in exchange for that.
Yeah, in exchange for your dignity.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there are some trinkets, there are some things that you can get by playing that game. But ultimately, I mean, you must look in the mirror and hate yourself. If I were a liberal white man.
What does that tell you about the value they place on what you're selling? Because you're selling your dignity, right? You're selling your strength. You're selling your self-respect, your ability to define yourself. And, you know, in my opinion, depending on how much of that you have to sell, these people, these devils, the devil himself is willing to give you the whole world for that. The whole world. What does that tell you? Nobody ever pays more for something than they think that thing is worth. They're always trying to get it for less, right? So they might think something's worth $1 million. They're going to try and get you down. If they think something's worth $1 million, they're not going to pay $1,000,001. So if the devil is willing to give you the entire world for your soul, dignity, all this stuff, that means it's worth more than the entire world.
Yeah. So that is a sobering way to look at it.
You are always getting ripped off when you sell yourself. Always.
Yeah. And I think you can see it in the faces of liberal white men, that they sort of know this at a certain level. They know that they've been cucked, and they know they've been degraded. And it's, I think they live their lives constantly trying to kid themselves about that.
Yep.
And it's just tragic. Yeah, it's just another sad aspect of what's happened or what's been done to us. And like you, I just pray that we snap out of this. Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah.
Okay, there are quite a few super chats. This is from Soaker City. Leonardo, I just had an old German dishwasher repairman who looked like Santa show up. My toddlers were entranced and clearly thought that he was Saint Nick. After he left, I said that he indeed was Santa in disguise to spy on them. Is it wrong to lie to kids like this, or am I doing it right?
No, I think he's doing it right. I think it's so cute. Kids believe in magic and the make-believe, and they love this stuff. They get so excited, you know? And it's like they don't have the full capacity to understand the world and what it is. So these things are part of the magic of being children, the way you see the world. So when you kind of like pop that balloon for them, you can't really even give them something to replace it because they're children. They don't have it. So all you've done is strip something from them that brings joy and gladness and makes their world so animated, magical. Right? And magical. Yeah, and so I think it's wrong to take that from kids. I think there's something wonderful about the way kids believe in the world and humans. Like, I just think it's great. And who knows, maybe he was Saint Nick.
Maybe
there's something about people's character that kind of shines through, and I think shines through their physiognomy. And there are these archetypes for a reason. So if your kids are reacting that way, there's a reason. It's like maybe that's the story they have about who he is. And it's like they're not going to understand. Well, he's got the archetype and he's general, you know, but they're going to understand Saint Nick, right? So you're sort of giving them a parable, if you will. And who cares? It's fun. Let kids be kids.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Chief Noticer says, seeing Leonardo in the replies of people on X discussing issues specific to Britain and her being so familiar with these issues and on point is hugely white pilling.
Oh, thank you.
I've noticed.
I feel for Britain.
I've actually had the same thing where I see you talking about British stuff and I think, oh, that's impressive, because I understand America's a huge world unto itself. So I'm always impressed when Americans know about what's going on over here.
I think we need to know about what's going on in every single one of our white countries. I think this division where we could be America versus England, you know, England versus France, France versus Germany, like that's done. We don't have that luxury anymore. And we really, I think, should never have had that. There's no reason for brother wars ever under any circumstances. We just kill the best of each other. And I do think this is, for me, like the meaning and heart of Christianity, of what it means to turn your other cheek to your brother, not the third world savage who sees that as weakness and is going to kill you. It's to your brother.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's who forgiveness is for.
Yes. And I agree with you that I think we should all know about what's going on in other white countries, because it's all related anyway. I mean, what goes on in Sweden is going to happen here, and it's all similar. I think I just feel that there's a connection.
Yeah, it is.
There's a responsibility for each other.
This is why I think, like, you know, like studying South Africa and Rhodesia is incredibly important for people. Like, they just, sometimes people just think, oh, this is happening. No, those are the prototypes. They use the same ideological subversion in those places. When you start to like study these things, you see the patterns and you understand that this is an ideology and a psyop, and you stop falling for it. Because when you're just in America and they're telling you you're on stolen land and you're all immigrants and it was built by immigrants, you can think, oh, that's kind of true in my country because we came here and all this stuff. But then when you go and you go, wait a second, they said this to the Rhodesians, they said this to the South Africans, they're saying it now to the Australians, they're saying it to the Brits. And then for the countries where they can't say that, like Ireland, they're starting to say some of the same things. The immigrants built your country, like stuff that doesn't have any root at all, not even a shred of reality. And you go, you know what? The whole thing is garbage. And you can fight this ideology, because we do have to fight it in ourselves, because we ourselves have absorbed this, having grown up in it. And then you can fight it on the outside, too. And be able to say, when you're in debate with someone or whatever, this is your bullshit, and it's not really, when you're fighting a third world savage in a debate or whatever, you're not trying to convince them. Like, who gives a fuck what they think? It's your opinion is irrelevant to me. I'm not interested in anything you say. Nothing you say has weight with me. And because you hate me and you're being dishonest. I'm talking to all the Europeans that are listening, that are still maybe thinking, maybe not, maybe that's who I'm talking to.
Absolutely. This thing about, well, with Ireland, for example, the argument that I've heard there is that Irish people emigrated to other countries. Therefore, the Irish people who stayed have got to tolerate people moving to Ireland. I mean, it's a stupid argument.
Do you see how they will twist themselves into a pretzel, and therefore you can understand that even their argument about colonialization is bullshit. Even that, because it's like, did they go into that country and make it worse for the people there? No. Actually, many times they were welcomed by some of the tribes who were being genocided by the other tribes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's crazy the amount of lying that's gone on about this stuff and still goes on today. But as you're alluding to, I think that white people just in general are fatigued, are bored to death with this stuff and are just starting to see through it in ever larger numbers. And it's great. It's great to see it developing, especially the contempt that this stuff meets on social media nowadays. I love to see it. Because it wasn't like this 10 years ago.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's fantastic to see. It's great. It's going to be more of an awakening because we can't. I honestly think we just have to stop fighting each other and they lose.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. Runt Meadow says, in the film The Box, it's always the women who press the button. Is this fair? Well, I'm not familiar with this film. Leonardo,
I don't know this film either.
No.
I don't know the film.
So I'm sorry, Runt Meadow, but we can't answer that. Unfortunately, it depends on familiarity with the film. Sorry. Don says, are you still engaged, Leonardo? Asking for a few friends.
Yes, I am. I'm very happily so. I love my man. He's great. He's fantastic.
Great. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Caller asks, any other Balkanoids in the movement? We may not be as bright as Anglos, but we are more aggressive and ethnocentric.
This is true. This is true. I like to look at European nations as a quilt, and they're each providing different things that are important. I think the Anglos provide the intelligence. The Germans provide, sort of engineering genius, and Albanians, Balkanoids provide sheer aggression and violence, which is necessary. Also, we have no white guilt. We have none. We're like, nice try. We were oppressed by brown Turks for 500 years. So we got zero white guilt.
That's great. That's great. Okay, Ghost Dog says, Eritrean friend is, Eritrean friend is hair trigger tribal ready to sacrifice you if you don't put her ahead of you. don't try to save an anti-white who is drowning in a white pool. Right. I think that's to do with your friend.
Yeah, obviously the friendship ended right after that. And I mean, here she is. She's trying to save a Nigerian. If they were in Africa, the both of them, they'd be fighting each other. But here, they're all friends.
Yeah, it's a thing, isn't it? This solidarity that they suddenly discover once, but then it's the same with us. You know, there a lot of white people discover solidarity once we're in the presence of non-whites. This is a gift of globalization. All right, and Estonian just says thanks, thank you, and Ghost Dog Man says Leonardo gives hope to based men everywhere.
Good. Hopefully I'll turn some more women that way, because that's what we really need, is the spark to light amongst women.
Yes, yeah, definitely. And then Justin Foster, what does Leonardo think about the state of American cities? Can they be saved? Here in Chicago, it seems they are in terminal decline. I don't know if liberals will ever wake up. So the state of American cities, do you have anything?
I mean, not great, and it's sad because I grew up in New York City. I still love it. It's my favorite city, best city, great. It's like that and Paris, my two favorite cities, both fallen, right? It's sad that we should give up the things that we created, the most wonderful places that we created. And the thing is that it's spreading like a cancer, because now they're starting to take these Section 8 housing and they're specifically and intentionally placing them in affluent white neighborhoods. They want to break up every coalition of whites that exist. And so I don't know, to be honest, you know, New York City was worse in the 70s, and that was enough to kind of bring people back to this, you know, that got Giuliani elected, right, and put in. But I'm not sure that people were as race conscious then. They probably had some race consciousness, but I don't think they were as race conscious as we are now, because in a way it was sort of just taken for granted and therefore not explicitly discussed. And there was that whole, like, you know, love, not war kind of crap. So we are sort of facing this unique challenge, because any discussion of what needs to happen ultimately comes down to race, right? But, you know, you can kind of play the game a little bit along the lines of, you know, being tough on crime, because that's automatically going to fall along race lines without saying that. But it will, right? Because who's doing it? And you can enforce that. But I don't know, man. I think we need to kind of get to a reality of race where that's just accepted. We come to a place where, like, that's just the truth and it's accepted, and there isn't any more of this clutching of pearls in response to it.
Yeah, definitely. I think ideally it would just be something that didn't even need to be said. It's just everyone understands it. Everyone gets it, like they used to. And I think like they would if it weren't for constant conditioning and propaganda and threats.
But I almost think, like, you know, problems kind of arise out of brokenness in the system. And in a way, us not having talked about race and being explicit about it was a design flaw. And so this problem has revealed that to us. And I think if we're actually going to overcome it, we have to grow beyond what we were. It's not about trying to go back to what we were, because we'll just end up here again. It's about taking that information about where we've gotten wrong and factoring it in and how we want to move forward and grow beyond that. So, and I think you're going to have to be explicit. If we ever get to a place again where, you know, we can fight back, you're going to have to be explicit along these lines. You're going to have to teach your kids. It's going to have to be public discourse. It's going to have to be out in the open, bold, and accepted, so that we do not allow for the rats to come in again and start subverting. You know, it's like the instant that comes up, if you have, you just think about it, if we had been raised this way generationally, to know these facts that we know now, to be clear about it, to be clear about the differences, to be clear about the way they feel about us and what they will do if they ever get power, which we now know. And somebody tried to come in and start arguing for equality or and race erasure. How would the reaction have been?
Oh yeah, complete rejection, instantaneous. Yeah,
that person might have been tried for treason. And yeah. So I think we need to plan for that going forward, like thinking like, how do we get this to a place like in 100 years, our descendants don't forget?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it needs to be like, yeah, it needs to be just in the discourse, in the media, in the culture, just
everywhere, you know,
a constant awareness of this.
If we're building our own, you know, society or whatever, and we're in charge, there's no reason that shouldn't be there.
Yeah, I completely agree. Okay, and Dave asks, when you fall in love and settle down, will you take a step back from your work?
I have fallen in love. I have settled down. And he encourages my work, actually, which is nice. But right, yeah, good. I would always put it, well, I do put it second to my relationship. That's the truth. It's like, it's great. I'm fighting for people, but I need to have a life that I think is worth fighting for. And I'm not this, we don't need men. I think we do. I think women need men, and I think men need women. I think God made us to find a person that you live and depend on, that you are built up in strength with, that, you know, and then hopefully have a family. You know, I think those are the fruits of God's blessings. And I think it's important that people realize that with all the qualms we have about women, which I agree, you guys are not wrong, and it's hard for you right now, to not give that up, because it's the keystone that's been taken from us and broken.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very nicely put. And I agree with every word. All right. Caesar himself says, happy Yule, Bose and Leonardo. I've shown your stand-up clips to many a fellow, all laughed and hooted. Cheers.
Oh, thank
there
you.
There we go.
Well, nice. That sounds great. I love that.
And Open Borders says, has the ADL come after Leonardo?
Not yet. I don't think I've popped up on their radar enough just yet.
I would expect them. I think, they won't have missed you. But the thing is, the ADL, I mean, it's like Hope Not Hate over here. They're a bit of a joke now. I really don't think they're as powerful, or they don't have the credibility that they had 5-10 years ago.
No, because their credibility came from hiding who they really were, and now everybody knows.
Well, yeah, certainly in America, there's very fast rising awareness of that. Yeah, definitely. Okay, Ghost Dog, this is the final one, says, I agree with Leonardo. The system will have to crash to sober up white women and even men to snap out of the brainwashing and value the natural order again. But they will try to keep the comfort coming. Well, yeah, that's the thing.
I will say, you know,
I think
know,
this system will try to rumble on. Sorry, go on.
I think the linchpin of everything for us is actually the you know, monetary system, the central banking system. I mean, that is the whole thing. That's the thing. That's how they get their money to fund all their little pet social projects. All of that comes from those people. That's how they keep us enslaved. That's how they keep us poor. That's how they keep us on this hamster wheel. And I really don't think anything changes until that goes out the window.
Yeah, I agree. Well, hopefully this, we can see economic recession on the horizon. I don't know. I hope it's not too awful for those of us who have to live through it. But yeah, in the end, probably that's what's going to be necessary. But Anyway, I'm getting very tired now because this is my first night of interviews,
so I'm not quite
in the rhythm of it yet. So I'm going to cut this one off now. But I think it's been a great conversation. I've really enjoyed listening to your story, and you've talked very thoughtfully about the different experiences you've had. So it's really interesting. You can see how it all pieced together and developed. But over, as I said, a short six, 7 years, I think because it was happening IRL rather than online initially. So
yeah.
You were sort of discovering this stuff organically in your own life. So yeah, an interesting story. And thank you for sharing with us.
Thanks for having me on. This was fun.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. There's one more from Angrad Celtic. Here are a few more I think it's ducats, or is it ducats? I can't remember. I actually know that word from The Merchant of Venice, oddly enough. Long time ago. She says, you're both very brave, brilliant, and a credit to our race.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much. That's very kind, Angrad. Okay, well, I'll be back tomorrow night with 4 interviews. You can have a look at the schedule to see who they are. And in the meantime, this has been really good. So, Leonarda, thank you for appearing on Millennial.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. All right, everyone else, I will see you tomorrow at the same time. Bye-bye for now.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. How about helping your tireless host? The Millennial NFT is a unique animated vector graphic available for just one lucky owner. The auction closes on the 30th. Make your bid today. Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile vlogger. Please help him to keep the fire burning.